In 1995, an heiress who had grown tired of high society life in Palm Beach, Florida, relocated to Vicksburg, Mississippi. This farmer's daughter turned millionaire wanted to get back to her roots and rebuild her relationship with her family. But within weeks of that move, the 62-year-old vanished.
People would have noticed her. They would have known that she was rich and living alone.
We just honestly have more questions than we have answers in this case.
This is the mystery of the disappearance of Jacqueline Levitz. This is Southern Mysteries.
It's gonna be all right. These ain't dark, all the troubled times. It's a day like any other day. You got a dark and troubled mind, all right. You hold that baby tight. And I swear if you can hear me, then everything gonna be just fine, all right. All right.
Welcome to Southern Mysteries, exploring historical mysteries and legendary figures of the American South. I'm your host, Shannon Ballard. Vicksburg is the only city in Warren County, Mississippi. Situated a few hours northwest of New Orleans, Vicksburg is where the Mississippi and Yazoo Rivers converge, with Vicksburg on the east bank of the Mississippi River, across from the state of Louisiana. The Mississippi River at Vicksburg bends broad and very brown. William Faulkner wrote a poetic description of the brown, muddy Mississippi in The Old Man, describing the river as rippling placidly towards the sea, brown and rich as chocolate. That brown and rich chocolate color, it's soil and sand, silt, and the muddy riverbed. If you've never had the chance to stand along the mighty Mississippi River and see and feel its vastness, you may find it hard to believe that that chocolate brown Mississippi River is really a thing of beauty, unique beauty. Historian and author Paul Schneider writes of the river in his book, Old Man River. His description of the Mississippi is realistic, devoid of romanticism about the mighty Mississippi. Schneider writes, "It commands every sense. There's the sound a truly big river makes, not loud, but nonetheless vast and soothing, more like wind over grasses than a waterfall. There's an odor to the river as well, vaguely sweet and earthy, though oddly more like the sea than like a mountain stream or a woodland lake." When it comes to the Mississippi River as it bends through Vicksburg, there's the constant sound of barges traveling in both directions, loaded with every commodity you can imagine. Boats and kayaks with adventurers braving the big river, and riverboats that carry tourists from city to city along the Mississippi. This river carries an eerie and magical beauty, and it also harbors a lot of secrets. It's wrapped in history and in folklore. Its treacherous currents have led to many a death, and its zero visibility, well, it makes recovering bodies from the river difficult, in some cases just impossible. Jackie Levitz was drawn to Vicksburg, Mississippi because she wanted to be near family. She bought her home on Riverwood Circle because it overlooked the Mississippi River. She wanted to wake up to the view and spend time watching boats pass by. Some folks in Vicksburg believe that the river she loved so much became her final resting place after she disappeared in 1995. Jacqueline Levitz was called many things in her lifetime. Southern socialite, beautiful, charming, charismatic. Jackie, as she preferred to be known, was tough and fearless. Her Louisiana roots helped foster that spirit. Jackie Levitz was born Mary Jacqueline Broadway on February 11, 1933, in Oak Grove, Louisiana, just about 50 miles northwest of Vicksburg. Jackie and her eight siblings grew up knowing the value of hard work. Her father was a cotton farmer in the days before the mechanical cotton pickers were invented. After she graduated from high school, Jackie left Louisiana and joined her older sister, Pat, in Beaumont, Texas. Jackie worked as a secretary, attended business school, and was known for her beauty. She won a beauty pageant when she lived in Texas. Jackie was beautiful. She wore her blonde hair in big curls, loved wearing figure-flattering clothes to show off her assets. As many friends put it, she could have been Dolly Parton's body double. And like Dolly, Jackie had an air of self-confidence and the ability to make people feel very comfortable around her. Jackie was warm and charismatic, but Jackie was no pushover. Jackie met and married her first husband, Walter Bolton Jr., while she was living in Beaumont. He was 14 years her senior, and soon after the marriage, they moved to Alexandria, Virginia, where Walter was the president of a manufacturing firm. By 1959, they had their one and only son, Walter Bolton III. Walter would later say that his marriage to Jackie fell apart because his business dealings fell apart. And as he put it, he was drinking heavily. The Boltons divorced in 1963. As Walter described it, it was a courteous divorce, and Jackie got full custody of their son. By December 1964, Jackie had met and married her second husband, Banks Smitty Smith, who owned a couple of steakhouses in Maryland. Their time together would be short. Nearly 5 years into the marriage, Smitty died at the age of 46. Jackie moved to Washington, D.C. and found that she had talent that could make her a lot of money, real estate, and the stock market. She began to amass a small fortune by buying and flipping homes. She would buy homes and apartments and use her decorating skills to turn them into the kind of place people really wanted to live and call home. She was a gifted decorator and salesperson, and in time and with a lot of hard work, Jackie was a multimillionaire with a fortune of over $4 million. Jackie decided it was time for a fresh start in a new city. She relocated to sunny Palm Beach, Florida, telling her sister, Jerry Brown, that real estate was hot as a firecracker in Palm Beach. Jackie's life in Palm Beach was fun. She had been right about the real estate market being hot, her business was going well, and she continued to pick up clients for decorating projects. She partied and mingled with celebrities like Burt Reynolds and Lonnie Anderson, and she partied with local high society. It was at a party in the mid-1980s that Jackie would meet Ralph Levitz. In the 1960s, Levitz and his brother Leon, well, they began selling moderately priced brand name furniture from a warehouse store in Pennsylvania. Leon was forced to resign as president of the company in the wake of a Securities and Exchange Commission investigation in the early 1970s. Ralph took over and retired in 1983, but the Levitz brand was well known in 20 states. You may remember this tagline from the commercials, "You'll love it at Levitz." When Jackie met Ralph, she told him she had purchased a lot of Levitz furniture in her decorating business. That conversation led him to ask Jackie if she'd like to decorate his new mansion on South Ocean Boulevard. She was hired by Ralph Levitz in 1987, and he instructed her to decorate the place as if she was going to live there. As Jackie worked on the home, the two really connected. Some of her friends found it an odd match. Ralph Levitz was 20 years older than Jackie and had been known to be difficult in relationships. But at this point in his life, he was lonely. And as friends noted, Jackie was lonely too. They were there for each other. And on April 18th, 1987, Ralph Levitz married Mary Jacqueline Broadway Smith. The society pages featured their wedding, noting that it was his sixth marriage, her third. He was 74, she was 52. He, a native of Pennsylvania, she of Louisiana, Southern accent retained. Ralph and Jackie lived in their $4 million home in Palm Beach that Jackie had decorated. They would spend the next few weeks attending house parties and high society events for work and for fun. Jackie Levitz was known to tool around town in her cream-colored Jaguar and was known for her fur stoles and diamonds. Some of those diamonds had once belonged to Marilyn Monroe. It was a life free from financial concern. Not much to worry about for the first 6 weeks. That's when Ralph Levitz had his first stroke. Jackie stood by his side, took care of Ralph when he was slightly disabled from the stroke. He was able to gain enough strength to play golf again and host benefits with friends, but as time passed and Ralph's health waned, Jackie found more and more of her energy and time was devoted to caring for him. In 1991, the couple decided their lavish home on South Ocean Boulevard was too large, so they sold it, downsized from a $4 million mansion to a smaller $2 million Mediterranean-style home. In March of 1995, Ralph Levitz died and left the bulk of his fortune to his wife. Jackie Levitz's wealth after the death of Ralph Levitz was estimated at a little over $15 million. Soon after Ralph Levitz was buried and his estate was settled, Jackie Levitz changed her phone number, made sure it was unlisted so she could avoid the inevitable calls from charities who wanted her to immediately start making donations to their cause. Jackie understood the reason they called. She and Ralph supported so many causes, but she needed a break from constant conversations about money. She was tired of charity appeals, tired of the importance placed on money among many in Palm Beach. Jackie Levitz was just tired. She had spent a lot of time and energy caring for Ralph Levitz, and now he was gone. She confided to close friends that she wanted to be close to people who knew that money wasn't the most important thing in life. Jackie hadn't remained close to her family as she had married and made a few moves since leaving Louisiana. So Jackie decided it was time to reconnect, get back to her roots, and surround herself with family again. She was ready to trade the fast life and fancy parties of Palm Beach for a slower pace. She put her house on the market and made a big decision. She would move to Vicksburg, Mississippi. The move to Vicksburg would mean she'd only be 20 minutes away from her sister, Tiki Shivers, and only an hour or so from her sister, Jerry, and her brothers, Joe and Sonny, and the rest of the family. And a move from Palm Beach to Vicksburg would also allow Jackie to slow down. Life along the Mississippi, it's definitely a slower pace. About 25,000 people call Vicksburg home. It's known for Civil War history, with Vicksburg National Military Park commemorating one of the most decisive Civil War battles. Antebellum homes and casinos along the Mississippi River are big attractions for tourists and locals alike. Jackie Levitz longed for the perfect view of the Mississippi River, and she found it when she looked at a home owned by Betty and John Moody. The home at 15 Riverwood Circle, it was simple, a brick home built on a bluff overlooking the Mississippi. And that view was the appeal. Jackie paid $260,000 cash for the home and finalized the purchase on October 13, 1995. This house on Riverwood Circle was the 28th home Jackie had purchased for herself, and she was ready for this home to be her last. Jackie quickly became friends with Betty and John Moody, and Betty made sure Jackie knew about a hidden safe in the house where she could store valuables. And she warned Jackie about something that scared Vicksburg newcomers, the bright searchlights from the riverboats down the Mississippi. Betty and Jackie would also spend time gushing over the latest National Enquirer or Star tabloid magazines. This was a treat for Betty Moody because her new friend Jackie knew some of the celebrities that were featured in those tabloids, having partied with them in Palm Beach. She would share secrets and stories about them with Betty during their daily chats. And Jackie also described her plan for the house in great detail. She told the Moody's she planned to enlarge the simple 3-bedroom, 2.5-bath brick ranch house into a 7-bedroom, 7-bath home with 2 kitchens, an 1,100-square-foot master bedroom suite with a circular bed, a wood deck, and a kidney-shaped outdoor pool with colored lights, 2 waterfalls, and a jacuzzi. She'd even planned a 2nd master bedroom with a safari theme for her son, Walter, who was still living in Washington, D.C. Walter was single, had never married, and Jackie told Betty that she was trying to get Walter to move to Vicksburg. Jackie Levitz went straight to work on her big plans and wanted to be hands-on. Jackie moved into the home in a sort of camping-out mindset. She only had a new bed, a table and chair that she had borrowed from her sister, and she had clothes and furs in her closet. She had a little refrigerator that was usually empty, but she always had a well-stocked liquor cabinet. This was a Jackie Levitz kind of campout. Her friend, Betty, would later say that she worried about Jackie sleeping alone in the home because it was in a rather secluded neighborhood. But Jackie told Betty she felt at peace, like a kid with a new toy. She was excited about her future, excited about the house. Her dream was to have the project completed by December so her family could spend Christmas with her in Vicksburg. Within days of moving into the house on Riverwood Circle in October of 1995, Jackie began interviewing contractors. And Jackie let each and every one of them know that she was tough and they shouldn't mess around with her or she'd make sure they didn't work again. She told each contractor she interviewed that she wanted the job done the right way the first time. She hired Built Right with the agreement that the contractors only worked on her place until the job was done. Every morning, the workers would show up at her house, say a prayer together, and by 7:30, they were hard at work on Jackie's place. Jackie bought a hard hat and spent most of her days with that construction crew, supervising the work of about 40 men. This beautiful, refined woman who had spent her days in designer dresses and heels in Palm Beach was now wearing a hard hat, leggings, and oversized sweaters with little embroidered flowers, and she always had on a pair of suede ankle boots. She even joked with some folks in town that she felt like she was in hiding because her life was so different in Vicksburg, and she was loving it. Every morning after the construction crew got to Jackie's place, she would make them coffee, cut up with them when they would take their breaks, and at the end of each day, she inspected their work and made notes of any changes or additions that needed to happen the next day. Jackie Levitz had a small life in Vicksburg, rarely socialized. She was new to town, and apart from her daily chats with Betty Moody, she didn't really know many people, apart from the construction crew coming to her home each day. She did occasionally go out to a casino with her sisters on the weekend for a night of dinner and gambling. Other than that, her social calendar was dedicated to her home and the renovation project. The only party Jackie attended when she moved to Vicksburg was a Mary Kay party. She didn't wear any of the makeup. She just figured it was a nice way to meet some neighbors. And she had plans to meet more people as time went on, get to know them more. Once her house was completed, she had told a few neighbors that she planned to throw a big party for the neighborhood, invite everybody. And every one of the neighbors she met, the women at that Mary Kay party, the folks she encountered at the casino, had the same story when they were asked about Jackie Levitz. They would say she was a nice lady, fun to be around, and they were looking forward to getting to know her and spending more time with her. What no one knew when they met Jackie Levitz between October and November of 1995 was that time was running out for her. Within weeks of moving to Vicksburg, Jackie Levitz would disappear. On Saturday, November 18th, 1995, James Burnett saw Jackie when she came into his store, Mid-South Lumber and Supply. She looked at wallpaper samples. His wife and daughter were in the store with him that day. Jackie was in around 4, left by 4:30, and the Burnetts would be the last people to see Jackie Levitz alive. Throughout the weekend, family had tried to contact Jackie Levitz, but hadn't heard back from her. She called at least one of her sisters every day, and when no call came and there was no answer at her home, they initially thought maybe she just got busy working on the house. But by Monday, November 20th, Jackie hadn't spoken with her family, and people were getting concerned. Jackie's brother-in-law, James Earl Shivers, lived in nearby Tallulah, Louisiana. He made the drive over the Mississippi River Bridge to Jackie's house to check in on her. One of Jackie's neighbors, Jody Gatling, was nearby when Shivers arrived and accompanied him into Jackie's home that day. And from the moment they got to her door, it was clear that something was very wrong. The door was unlocked. A television was on. And as Jody Gatling and James Shivers walked through the home, they found what appeared to be blood in one of the bathrooms. They also found blood all over the carpet. Jackie Levitz often wore false fingernails. Pieces of those nails were found on the floor in her bedroom, a clear sign that Jackie had put up a fight against whoever had been in that room with her. James Shivers called Vicksburg police, and when they arrived on scene and saw the blood in the home, they immediately called in the crime lab. Police noted that there were no sheets on Jackie Levitz's mattress. They turned the mattress over and found that it was soaked in blood. So much blood that 2 days after Jackie Leavitt's had disappeared, the blood was still wet. Authorities ordered tests to confirm whether the blood belonged to Jackie Leavitt. It would take days to get results, but those tests didn't slow down their work. From the moment police were called to Jackie Leavitt's home, they searched every inch of the house, the property, and the surrounding area, trying to find any sign of her and trying to piece together what had happened inside that home. Police looked for clues that she may have been a victim of robbery gone wrong, but they found the only things missing from Jackie's home were her purse and a makeup bag. Jackie's furs, worth nearly $200,000, were still in her closet. Diamond earrings were in Jackie's room, in plain sight. Jackie's Jaguar was parked in the driveway, and her keys were inside the house. Jackie Leavitt was a very rich woman, which led police to wonder if she had been kidnapped. But there was no ransom, no contact of any kind from potential kidnappers. Jackie's family also pointed out a detail about a glass in Jackie's room. When authorities searched the house, they found a glass of water on the windowsill. It appeared Jackie had been drinking from that glass and left it out. Her family said if Jackie had been done drinking the water, she would have put that glass in the sink. She was very particular about not leaving a glass out in the home. Jackie's friend, Betty, also told police that just days before Jackie disappeared, the two had been on the phone, and Jackie had been gushing about a beautiful boat that she was watching pass by. Betty told authorities that Jackie would often sit at her window to watch boats navigate the Mississippi. Perhaps that's what Jackie had been doing the day she went missing, was interrupted as she sat at the window, sipping a glass of water, watching boats along the Mississippi. Authorities called in the FBI to help with the search. Bloodhounds had been used from day one to search for any sign of Jackie Leavitt, and with the FBI supporting the investigation, a helicopter search was initiated, which led to no new clues. Local authorities worked with the FBI to cover more ground and more areas along the Mississippi River, but they found no sign of Jackie's body or of the sheets from her bed. Police scoured the area around Jackie's house and along the Mississippi. Just outside of Jackie's door, they did find one clue: fresh tire tracks in the grass. Police theorized that the tracks were from a vehicle that had backed up to the door, which was in line with what one witness shared with police when they canvassed Jackie's neighborhood for clues. Then Warren County Sheriff Paul Barrett said a witness reported seeing a dark car at Jackie's home at about 11 p.m. on November 18th. And that witness noted that the car had backed up to the house. Soon after, the witness saw the car's lights come on and the vehicle drove away. And the witness made it clear he did not see Jackie Leavitt that night, and no description of the car has ever been offered. Days after Jackie Leavitt disappeared, tests confirmed that the wet pool of blood that had been discovered on her mattress and in her bathroom did indeed belong to Jackie Leavitt. Authorities broke the news to Jackie's family. Her relatives agreed that Jackie had most likely met with foul play, but they didn't give up on Jackie, believed there was a possibility she could come home. But internally, investigators felt that due to the amount of blood in Jackie's home, that this disappearance was really a murder investigation. Warren County Sheriff Paul Barrett told the Associated Press in late November of 1995 that investigators believe she was dead. And the most unsettling part of the case is that they couldn't figure out why someone would kill Jackie Leavitt and then remove her body from her home. Jackie Leavitt's family wanted answers. They offered a few rewards for information about her disappearance. Those rewards would eventually reach $200,000. The story of Jackie's disappearance was front page news in the Miami Herald. The Washington Post was extensively reported on television and in the New York Times, featured on Dateline and America's Most Wanted. From time to time, detectives would receive tips, sometimes from a psychic saying they had a vision of Jackie near a large body of water. And occasionally a tip would come in reporting a body in the Mississippi River. But the tips wouldn't pan out. Now, those in Vicksburg who believed Jackie Leavitt was dead believed her killer or killers had taken her body to dispose of her and any potential evidence in the Mississippi River. It made sense to people who knew the river and its fierce currents. The Mississippi is too deep and too wide to drag. Investigators estimate that a corpse dumped in the strong current near Vicksburg has a 50% chance of making it clear to the Gulf of Mexico without ever washing ashore. All the questions authorities had, Jackie's family and their neighbors kept asking, well, they've never been answered. 62-year-old Jackie Lovitz disappeared on November 18th, 1995. To this day, her disappearance and presumed murder remains one of the most notorious mysteries in Mississippi history. With all mysteries come theories, and there are many theories as to what happened to Jackie Lovitz in November of 1995. Authorities looked into every aspect of Jackie's life, every state where she had lived and conducted business, from Mississippi, Louisiana, Texas, and Florida, to Virginia, Maryland, and California. They interviewed friends, family members, ex-family members, and former clients, and found that a majority of them agreed on a few things about Jackie Lovitz. She was shrewd and determined to maintain her wealth. She had grown up poor and vowed to never be in that state again. And she kept to herself a lot, didn't confide in many people. She was likable, but there never seemed to be much depth to her relationships, which helped make sense of Jackie's move to Vicksburg to try to reconnect with her family and have deeper relationships in her later years. Investigators could find no obvious signs of Jackie harboring dark secrets that could have gotten her killed. Maybe she just met the wrong person in Vicksburg, rubbed someone the wrong way, and ended up paying for it with her life. Investigators knew one thing for sure. Jackie Lovitz was last seen at James Burnett's store at about 4 p.m. on Saturday, November 18th. Burnett would later tell WMC Action News 5 that the day Jackie came into the store, she was with a man in a pickup. She bought a barbecue grill and paid for it in cash. He didn't know who the man was, but Burnett would always wonder if that man was involved with what happened to Jackie Lovitz. Maybe he was a friend she had met at the casino who was helping transport that barbecue grill to her home, possibly even a member of the construction crew that helped her that day. Could have been a love interest. But the man in the truck has never been publicly identified or confirmed to have been with Jackie that day. Investigators interviewed every member of the construction crew that had been working at Jackie's home. Each member of the crew cooperated, and there were no obvious threats to Jackie. That is from the members of the construction crew that were still employed when Jackie disappeared. Early in the investigation, authorities questioned two drifters who had worked at Jackie's home for a few days but had been fired. One of them had a theft conviction, but other than that, no serious criminal history. Due to a lack of evidence, both men were released. Less than a week after Jackie disappeared, police arrested two young men, 21 and 17 years old, and charged them with breaking and entering Jackie Lovitz's home after she disappeared. They had stolen Jackie's fax machine and credit cards found in the home. Investigators would later reveal that the 21-year-old was high on Quaaludes and that both men had been questioned and had nothing to do with Jackie's disappearance. Jackie's lawyer had his own theory about her disappearance. He believed she may have been a victim of a botched kidnapping. Things had gone horribly wrong in the home, and her would-be kidnappers killed her before they could make a ransom demand, then hastily wrapped her body in sheets, tried to clean up their mess, and removed her body from the home using that dark car that was backed up to her house on the night she disappeared. And there was speculation that Jackie's disappearance could be connected to the disappearance of Irene Silverman, a wealthy New York woman who was in her 80s when she disappeared from her New York City townhome in 1998. Infamous mother-son crime duo Kenneth and Sante Kimes were convicted of Irene's murder in May of 2000, but Irene's body has never been found. Police did pursue the theory that the Kimes could have heard of the wealthy heiress in Vicksburg and carried out the crime. And for a time, they were official suspects. But investigators have since made it clear, and I'm quoting the FBI here, there is nothing that would indicate that they had anything to do with Jackie Levitz. One final theory was posed by a journalist to a Warren County sheriff. Did Jackie Levitz somehow fake her own disappearance? The sheriff says that's the least likely of all the theories he's heard around this case. Based on the evidence in the home, he just wasn't buying that one. Within a year of the disappearance of Jackie Levitz, her younger sister, Tiki Shivers, and her son, Walter Bolton III, were appointed executors of her estate. They were to protect her assets until her disappearance was solved, or until Jackie was legally declared dead. Without a body, it would take up to 5 years before she could be declared dead, and the assets of her estate divided. In December of 1996, Tiki and Walter filed a lawsuit against a self-proclaimed psychic, Barbara Norcross, asking that a judge order this woman to butt out of the investigation into Jackie's disappearance and to butt out of the family's legal matters. But Barbara Norcross was more than a psychic. She was a friend of Jackie Levitz, had known her in Florida, and said Jackie had been murdered. She had seen her murderers in a vision, had even described the killers to a tabloid newspaper. She asked the court to give her access to Jackie Levitz's financial records because she felt that if she could see those records, she could lead police to Jackie's killers. Jackie's family were appalled by the request, noting that Jackie's case had recently been featured on America's Most Wanted, and they were hoping for new leads, still holding to hope that Jackie could be alive. The judge ruled that the lawsuit was baseless and threw it out. But that didn't stop Barbara Norcross from making claims that Jackie's family had been involved in her death because they wanted to financially benefit from her. Jackie's son, Walter, well, he had been questioned early on by police. He was said to inherit millions from Jackie when she died. But police confirmed he was thousands of miles away when Jackie disappeared. And although there were rumors Walter could have hired someone to kill his mother, police say he was never a suspect, directly or indirectly. A Florida court declared Jackie Levitz legally dead in 2001. Her estimated $5 to $8 million estate was dispersed to her son and family members. Money definitely complicated things for Jackie's family after her disappearance and death. It even led to a lawsuit being filed with sister against brothers. In April of 1995, Jackie loaned $70,000 to her brothers, Joe and Don Broadway. Now, the brothers purchased property in Arkansas. The siblings signed a promissory note for the amount of $70,000. The first payment would be due on May the 1st of 1997, and the last was to be due on April the 1st of 2007. Following Jackie's disappearance and the declaration of her death, her sister Tiki had been named administrator of her sister's estate. Tiki filed suit against her brothers, Joe and Don, believing she could cash in on that $70,000 they owed Jackie. But the case fell apart when Joe and Don made it clear that Jackie had released them from the debt. Jackie's sister, Jerry, was with Jackie when she visited their brother, Joe, and discussed the use of the land in Arkansas, which he had turned into a hunting club. He told Jackie he was considering selling the hunting leases to get the money to pay Jackie all that he owed her. Jackie told Joe not to sell anything and made it clear to him that day that she was forgiving the debt and that the brothers didn't have to worry about paying the money back. Her only request was that Joe and Don use the money to make the property a place the whole family could enjoy. In a separate visit with three aunts, Jackie mentioned this conversation with her family and again told them she had forgiven the promissory note and there would be no paying her back for anything. The judge ruled the brothers weren't obligated, that there was no debt, because Jackie had forgiven it, and many witnesses were able to confirm that. It's been almost 24 years since Jackie Levitz disappeared. Psychics still call police from time to time, reporting a vision of Jackie Levitz's body. Sometimes the vision is near a barn, sometimes in the Mississippi River. As one investigator put it, a psychic calling to say Jackie's body is near a body of water in Vicksburg, Mississippi, is like someone living in Arizona saying a missing person is in the Grand Canyon. You gotta narrow it down, which has been tough for investigators. The case is still officially open, and investigators and Jackie's family still hold on to hope that the case can be solved. In November of 2008, investigators were interviewed by Action News 5 and noted that DNA evidence could be the key to this case. They've never revealed many clues about the evidence they do have, but authorities have confirmed that there's been DNA testing on case evidence, the kind of testing that didn't exist in 1995. During the same update on Jackie's case, her brother, Mitch Broadway, said that his family holds on to hope for answers and clues people could offer. He believed with all of his heart that someone saw something that just didn't seem right, noticed an acquaintance, friend, or even family member acting strangely around the time Jackie Leavitt's disappeared. The family said they just need someone to be brave because it's not too late to come forward. It's never too late to tell the truth and help a hurting family find the answers they not only want, but need. In Jackie's hometown of Oak Grove, Louisiana, there's a headstone that bears the name Jacqueline Leavitt's. And below a photo of Jackie, these words, an inspiration to those who loved her. Jackie Leavitt's is still a missing person. She was declared dead in a civil court, but from a criminal standpoint, she's still missing because her body has never been located. Authorities say they still get tips and they follow down every lead, but they've received no information that's led to a break in the case. If you have any information, you're asked to call the FBI field office in Mississippi at 601-948-5000. Southern Mysteries is hosted and produced by me, Shannon Ballard. You can find details about the mystery and see videos and photos of Jackie Leavitt's in the show notes for this episode at southernmysteries.com. I wanted to say thanks to those of you who have been listening to Southern Mysteries on the free Radio Public app. When you listen on the iOS or Android app, you're supporting Southern Mysteries because I get paid when you listen. It's an easy way to support the show and to discover new podcasts. So if you haven't done it yet, I hope you'll download the Radio Public app and add Southern Mysteries to your favorites. Again, the Radio Public app, it's free and available for iOS and Android. However you listen, make sure you're subscribed to Southern Mysteries so you never miss an episode. Thanks for listening.